listening to the Jenny McCarthy Show on SiriusXM Stars.
Welcome back to the Jenny McCarthy Wahlberg Donnie Wahlberg Show.
Jenny McCarthy Wahlberg Donnie Wahlberg. That's all I got. I do the theme songs.
Yeah, he does the special ones. Maybe you could do one for Thomas Gagliano.
Thomas Gagliano is here to help us.
Hey, there you go. I'm ready.
Here to help us. His books, The Problem Was Me, along with Don't Put Your Crap in Your Kid's Diaper. He also has a Instagram, at The Problem Was Me, where he also promotes his, I don't know if they're weekly, I'm going to find out, bi-weekly, amazing webinars or talks, I should say, like TED Talks to help us through pretty much all facets of life. Hi, Thomas. How are you?
Doing great, Jenny. You guys are right. You staying safe?
Staying safe, trying to stay sane, trying to heal, trying to learn, trying to listen, trying to do all those things. And this is where I'm grateful that I have this show, to have a platform to bring on people that we've, you know, that I trust, that I've had on before, that I feel like I was very knowledgeable, and also who our audience love. And you're one of those people. And I thought, let me get Thomas on this show ASAP. I know you did a webinar. I keep calling it a webinar. What would you call them? Talks?
Yeah, I do like talks with Tom Instagrams, especially now. This is the opportunity for all of us, since we're all together, to increase our communications, enhance the intimacy with those around us. So I'm trying to get on here as much as I can and help people out. And I have my Instagram lives on my The Problem Was Me on Instagram Live. And I've been doing a lot of podcasts on The Problem Was Me as well. So, yep.
Right. And it's at Thomas. No, it's at The Problem Was Me is the Instagram page. So, you know, we are obviously going through chaos, healing, hopefully ascension. What has been the conversations that people have been coming to you with? Do you notice a collective question that you could ask more than others?
Yes. You know what I tell people? You know what a funny thing about life is, that the uncomfortable conversations we have with our significant other, with our children, those are the conversations that enhance intimacy and closeness. Mm-hmm. But many of us are so afraid to have those conversations. Why? Because they're uncomfortable. They're painful. If I tell my spouse how I feel, am I going to make them mad? If I say, you know, when you did this, it was hurtful. I'm not saying you meant to hurt me, but when you did this, it was hurtful and it pushed me away. What I'm saying really is, I'm having this conversation because I want to get closer to you, not because I'm trying to hurt you. But many people with their children, with their significant other, they avoid uncomfortable conversations. And I keep telling people, those, if done empathetically, communicated empathetically, really, that's the journey to enhancing the closeness in your life.
100%. Well said.
That's what I posted on Instagram the other day. Just we want to turn away from the uncomfortable conversations. Those are the ones we need to turn into. Go to it. Don't move away from it. Move towards it. Totally.
Towards it.
Well, the worst conversation. Go ahead.
It's okay to be afraid, but don't let that stop you. That's the key. Many of us haven't grown up with that. We never saw our parents have uncomfortable conversations. Right. So right away in our world, we make up the story that if I say certain things, the outcome is not going to be good. So we make up a story. I tell couples all the time, tell your spouse the story you're making up. Listen, the story I'm making up is, if we talk about this issue with our kids, that you're going to yell or get angry. And I don't want that. Let's talk about it. So we got to put our story out. So many clients will come to me and say, I think my wife thinks this, or I think my husband thinks this. And my answer is, why are you thinking it? Why don't you have the conversation?
Right.
Right. And I feel like, well, I know in our home, we're definitely having, you know, heavy talks, heavy hearted talks. They've been going very well. I'm really proud of our boys. And, you know, us for the way we're presenting it and the way we tried it. It's like, you want to educate your kids, but you also don't want to, you know, you want to be mindful of your own perception, your own glasses. And a lot of us, and a lot of moms I talk to, are like, I don't even know where to start. start. And I'm like, okay, in terms of race relations, the worst conversation you can have is no conversation at all. Right. So where are some beginning places to start with your kids?
Here's a key word, curious. Okay. Be curious. We haven't been kids in a long time, some of us, especially me. So we forget or don't realize how our kids are viewing the world. We think we do. So find out. Talk to your kids, not at your kids. Be curious. Hey, what do you think of this? How do you feel about this? Now, here's the key. I'm going to go through this really quick because it's so, so important. First, I'm curious. Next, they tell me their feelings. I validate and acknowledge those feelings. I don't have to agree with them, but I validate and acknowledge what they're saying. Because why? A child that feels like their feelings matter will feel like they matter, okay? Now, children that don't feel like they matter to their parents will not stop loving their parents. They'll stop loving themselves. And if that happens, when they grow up, you will see them acting out with destructive behaviors or acting in with depression, anxiety, or both. So again, a child that feels like their feelings matter to their parents feel like they matter. And if they don't feel like they matter to their parents, it's not their parents they stop loving. It's themselves.
Mm. Yeah, that's really well said. You know, and I read somewhere about those initial conversations, like you said, about getting curious. This goes right in line with that. To see where your child is on a conscious level, asking them questions like putting on a Disney movie. Sadly, there's one African-American princess out of all these Disney movies. There's Moana, who's Hawaiian, but you know, to watch it and start asking questions like, do you notice anything different about this movie? You know, do you have to be a certain color to be a princess? Those questions allow you to see where your child might be, correct?
Right. And validate and acknowledge what they say. If we're going to tell our children, oh, that's silly, or I don't know why you feel that way, or when anything that doesn't validate their feelings, they're going to shut down and not talk to you. As you have said before, Jenny, I remember with your son and how your son openly talks to you because you created an environment where he's safe enough to say how he feels and isn't going to feel judged. So when we're asking questions about what's going on with the riots or what's going on with these things, it's important to acknowledge and validate what they say. You don't have to agree, validate. Now, I also always teach my son consequences. I need to, okay? I said this before. My son came to me in eighth grade and said, you know, Dad, I want to smoke weed, for instance. You know, talking to kids about prejudice, about terrorism, about all of these uncomfortable things. And when he came to me and said that, what I wanted to say, being a recovering addict, is get in your room till you're 26 years old, and then I'll tell you you could come out. Well, I couldn't say that. But what I said to him was this. Let's talk about what weed can do to you or not do to you. Let's go on the computer. I was curious with him. And I also said to him, look, the choices you make in life has the consequences that bestow you. If you do something illegal, you could go to jail. I didn't make that rule up, Jenny. That's the law. So if I do something illegal, if he does something illegal, he could go to jail. He's got to know it's the choices he makes. And as we spoke about this, he came to me a couple of weeks, and he says, I don't hang out with those kids no more, Dad. They do other things too. Here's the point of the story. We cannot control our children's behavior for long. Eventually, they're going to do what they want to do, not what we tell them to do. They may listen to us early on, but when they get old enough and those hormones shoot up and they get the driver's license, they're going to do what they want to do. So what do we want to do? We want to create a child that makes the right decisions on their own because they want to, not because mom and dad's twisting their arm. So when my son came to me back and said, Dad, I don't hang out with those kids anymore, he made that decision. I didn't have to make it for him. So when we raise children that can go out in the world and face the world and make good choices on their own, they're the ones that are going to deal with life with self-esteem and integrity and not break down the first time they fail. Because, you know, one of these things about life, everybody gets a trophy stuff. I want to tell you something. Children need to learn how to fail. Not that they should be indoctrinated on failing, but failing is part of growing. Right. And when you give a trophy to everybody, you're not telling them that life is about stumbling at times. You got to get up.
God, that's so true.
It's interesting because I'm sitting here, you know, and we try to be good parents and good friends and good, you know, allies and you know, and really listen and stay awake and alert and be there for people. I'm thinking now, though, I'm thinking about, you know, stuff that my son's been going through and working on music and doing stuff. And I'm like, I don't know that. I'm literally sitting here like wondering, wow, I don't think I validated his feelings about a few things. Like I'm really literally identifying moments when I didn't do that. It's making me a little emotional. So forgive me, but, and I don't want to co-opt this conversation, but I really, I'm just seeing that right now, you know, as you know, like our hearts are open right now. Right. Okay. So we're seeing things and my conversations with people are a little different. You know, I'm the instinct to interrupt someone and I may be actually doing this other thing of like relating to it, but I just want to thank you for saying that because I think you just made me aware that as close as I am to my son, I think I've didn't validate his feelings a few times recently. And I'm going to go upstairs after the show and acknowledge that. Is there any way to approach acknowledging it that you'd recommend? Good. So I don't just co-opt that conversation from him.
I love the fact that you're saying this. I wish more men would look and take an inventory. Let me tell you a key for you, Donnie. When you see your child struggle, don't react. Stop and think of what you would have wanted to hear from your mom and dad at that age. Let that compassion guide what you say and how you say it. And again, I'll just real quick story about my son. And I think, Donnie, you could relate to this. He was a pitcher in high school and he was in a game and he pitched terrible. And his team lost. And I remember walking over to the dugout afterwards, and I knew he'd be beating himself up. I knew it. And I said to myself, gee, what kind of hat should I wear? Should I wear a therapist hat and say, hey, how you feeling, son? Should I wear a baseball hat and help him with his follow through? Here's what happened. I walked in the dugout. He looked at me and he said, Dad, I need a hug.
Oh.
That's all he needed was a hug. He didn't need a therapist. He didn't need a baseball coach. He needed a hug from his father. There's times to fix our children. There's times to tell them what they're doing right and wrong. There's times to really nurture them in areas. But when they're hurting, nothing's better than a hug. That's what I would have wanted from my dad. And you know what's funny, Donnie? I remember hugging him and all these kids, all these 15-year-old kids are looking at us in this sight in the dugout. And I'm saying to myself, how many of these kids are saying, man, would I have loved a hug from my dad when I made an error or I failed a test or a woman or man broke my heart, a girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. How many times did we need a hug? And that's what I say when
I still need a hug.
Yeah, still need a hug, right or wrong. I mean, listen, my wife, too, when she's really, she don't need me to fix a damn thing. She needs a hug. And so many of us do. But we don't know how to ask for it. And I was proud that my son was able to ask for that right in front of his friends.
Yeah. I how many times I wish my dad went to a game. I played Little League.
Hey, Donnie, I'm with you.
I remember the championship game. We won the championship right before the game. He was like, I ain't coming with a Schlitz in his hand.
Oh, God, I'm with you. I am like, so with you.
All right, Dad. And then we won. And it was like.
Yep.
Donnie and I categorize the 70s dad in a cartoon way because we all can experience the 70s dad. Like, shut up, give me a beer.
Yeah. Schlitz and a cigarette.
Yeah. What about when I showed emotion to my dad? You know what he called me? Come on, little girl. That was my nickname if I ever showed any kind of emotion or, God forbid, cried. Come on, little girl. So the messaging deep down inside is that I'm not going to share my feelings, not with my future wife, as I grew into intimacy, or my kids. Are you kidding? Sharing feelings was painful as a kid. So what I did, like a good recover, like a good addict, I never shared anything, Donnie. Nothing. You couldn't pull a feeling out of me if you put your hand down my throat. And I acted out what I wasn't able to talk about or process.
Wow. That's impactful. I will say that. Thomas Scagliano, I'm going to keep talking to you. I just want to plug this again. The Problem Was Me is the name of the book. You guys can also follow him on Instagram because he gives amazing talks. And then Don't Put Your Crap in Your Kid's Diaper is the other book that's available right now. Let's talk about couples that don't agree on topics. How do you counsel them, period? Let me keep it just very broad for now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first of all, the healthiest relationships are those that know how to regulate conflict between both. Doesn't have to agree. We don't have to have a winner. Instead of being right, we choose closeness. Instead of being right, we know when to choose our battles. What's maybe more important to my wife than it is to me right now? Do I got to win this argument? So I choose my battles. And also I let go of needing to be, when I was younger, man, I had to be right about everything. Nobody could tell me a darn thing. Okay. Always had to be right. I pushed away everybody in the world, but I had to be right. So I learned I don't have to be right. I could acknowledge, I can choose closeness instead. What I do with couples is this, and you know, Jenny, one of the things couples want is the same thing. They want to feel like they matter to the person they're with that they love. They want to be a priority. Now, we have all different stories in my sessions. A wife will give me her stories, the guy will give me his stories, but underneath, one of the common denominators is they want to feel like they matter to the person that they love. And they want to know that they're a priority to the person they love. So I go deeper than what the content is, if you follow me. I go to what's underneath. And what's underneath is, how could you show this person that you care? What actions can you take? And what actions can you take? And when I have a couple that'll look at me and say, well, there's nothing I can do, I kind of scare them a little bit because I go to them, well, we're done with the session then. What do you mean? What do you mean? Well, if you can't think of one thing that you can do to make this relationship better, and I'll ask them both the same question, because sometimes we're only looking at the other person in our relationship. Mm-hmm. We feel so victimized that we can't hear a damn thing that they're saying.
So true.
And I got to get out of that. We're not going to go down that street with the couple. We choose closeness. How could you choose to be close now instead of being right?
And is that the same answer you would give? Because my follow-up is, what do you do when your partner and you don't agree, you know, on many topics, and yet trying to parent and instill those views on your child or children?
First, a lot of conversations have to be, I'm sure, done without the children listening, with only the two people talking about that. And it's important, again, to be able to give your partner the message that you really hear them. Maybe you don't agree, but you really hear them. Okay. Because if I hear you, you can better hear me. Now, at least we're starting at a point where even if I disagree with you, I can hear you. And some things really are not resolvable in that you're going to get to the answer that's going to fit both. And that's what I mean about it. It's not always 50-50 in a relationship. Sometimes I got to give more. Sometimes my wife has to give more. If every time I go into a conversation expecting to get what I give, I'm going to set myself up for predetermined resentments. Right. As long as it's not always one person doing all the giving, that's not the way it goes. But it's not always 50-50 in every conversation. Sometimes I got to just get 25% and give 75%. And it's okay. Nobody has a perfect relationship. We're going to have stumbles. We're going to have disagreements. Try not to have them when you're angry. If you find that you're juiced up about something, stop. Let's talk about this later, another time, maybe out to dinner with his little piece. When we get juiced up, we're going to go down what I call the destructive dance, which you ain't coming out of that one. So you pause and then you revisit it when you're calmer. But understand that sometimes it's not going to always be 50-50.
And I think that key, what you just said, and we've talked about this before, Donnie and I, and we do it, which is pause. That's the pause, yes. Taking space that still, I mean, that's a thing to just practice alone, because that's really hard when you're activated. You're when you're triggered and you think you're right. And then to be able to pause and find that space, how does one do that if they're needing a tool to do that?
Okay. Great question. Here's what I tell clients. We're not just in a relationship with our partner. We're in a relationship with their childhood messages as well. And they're in a relationship with our childhood messages as well. Ugh. If I was, I was the kind of guy that my father, I couldn't do a damn thing right. He just told me everything I did wrong. It's no wonder that when my wife told me to take the garbage out, I heard she was saying I'm a horrible husband. Not what she said. It was what I was filtered to believe. When we get to that point, what I call it is put on your big boy, big girl shoes on. Because when I am triggered in conversations, usually I'm time traveling back to a time in my childhood where something's awakening in me, whatever it is, okay? We'd have to go through the childhood to know, because we all do things in our childhood for self-survival mode. Now, my dad was a raving alcoholic who came home and he used to beat the crap out of people, okay? So my childhood was based on control. I had to make sure my mother was safe. I had to make sure this was safe. It's no wonder that in my adult life, when my fears came up with my wife, I wanted to control the situation because that's what I thought kept me safe. So I have to remember my childhood messages coming up. My wife, on the other hand, grew up in a childhood where she was suppressed. She couldn't say anything from her father. So she's got to be aware to find her voice when she gets afraid, because all of these messaging in childhood will come up when we're a little juiced up in our conversation with that significant other. I call it time traveling. And the more aware we are of that partner's childhood messages, the better we're going to have that conversation. Because when it comes up, we're not going to sit there and go, gee, where did that come from? I'll tell you where it came from. A 10-year-old little girl or a 10-year-old little boy.
Oh. Wow.
Right? I mean, this is something that we recently discovered about our own bumps, which was really amazing to find out, which was underneath the basically the subtext of our arguments were we were just trying to help each other.
Right.
And when we noticed and looked into our childhood, we're both like middle children. We both supported our families. We both had alcoholic fathers that we wanted to make sure everyone was fine and happy and taken care of.
Peacekeepers.
So we're doing it to each other, but it's not saying I'm just trying to help. I want to help you. How can I help you? It's like, well, I ordered this even though you didn't ask for it, you know, kind of things that would spiral.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then, it's not what I wanted. And then the feelings are hurt because, well, I went out of my way to do that. And now you're not happy. And like,
you got it.
And you know, of course this was like, 3 weeks into COVID and, we're sensitive and vulnerable right. I found that a lot of the stuff we're experiencing in our country right now and with COVID, it's like it definitely, there's like when COVID first started, for example, I'll just go there. It's like, there was a moment where it was like, all the work and all the tools, to cope with certain things, suddenly it was like they went out the window. And it was like I was a scared 10-year-old boy again. The 10-year-old boy came out to play and it was like, man, I thought I worked through all this. I thought I knew how to process this. And then I had a little bit of shame that I couldn't, that I was feeling this way. And it took me time to be able to admit it to Jenny, to find that vulnerability to say, absolutely, I'm afraid right now. I'm afraid right now that I don't have the answers and it's scary. And, it was a process, but I could see where we weren't ourselves, because I wasn't myself. And, is there, I found my way through that. She helped me find my way through that. Is there a way for people in these times to, any advice to sort of, for them to identify when something's happening like that and how to find that vulnerability to just reach out for help or reach out to express, because it can turn into something else. Like, I could have blamed her for everything I was feeling and not confronted myself about it.
Absolutely.
Well, couples-wise. So couple in the home that's, struggling with this.
Well, this is why all of us in life have to detach with love. I have a support group. My wife has a support group. We love each other, but we detach and we get support sometimes away from each other that happens. It's okay. Yeah. It's not anything wrong. But I'm going to take a little guess here. being that you both had alcoholism, you probably both were parentified a little bit as children, where you grew up kind of quick because you were in that self-survival mode where you had to. And what happens sometimes in that situation is we're trying to make others happy, to find a happiness in ourselves. And we confuse self-care and selfish. Sometimes when I'm taking care of myself, I got a message from childhood saying, God, I must be selfish. Mm-hmm. When it's not, it's self-care. So when you're both talking to each other, you're both kind of fixing the other person's problems, maybe more than they want to fix their problem. Which can get you in trouble sometimes.
Sure.
That's so good, the way you said that.
Yeah. So you got to pull back a little bit and know a little bit of the childhoods that you both similarly had. And again, that's the parentification made you really try to make the other person happy in order for you to be happy. Mm-hmm. And that was not self-care. It was known in your childhood as being selfish when it's not. So I think you both in situations have to pull back and really kind of think of yourself a little bit and talk more in the mode of, you know, Jenny, when you did this, it was hurtful. I'm not saying you meant to hurt me, but I need to say this to get closer to you. You know, Donnie, when you did this, it really hurt. It made me disappointed. I'm not saying you meant to do this, but this is how we have the uncomfortable conversations. Because sometimes if our conversations are only predicated on making the other person happy, we could be setting ourselves up for a little resentment at that point.
Yeah. That's right.
You got to pull back a little bit.
Yeah.
So well said. This is why I love Thomas Gagliano, everybody. Thomas, thank you for coming on. I know it was short notice, but I said we need a Thomas visit badly. You just cut right through and know how to help people. And thank you for your service, because you are helping so many people. And the fact that you do your Instagram talks every week or every other week, I'm not sure how often, but you guys have to check them out at The Problem Was Me on Instagram. That's
Don't
also the name of his book.
Put your crap in your kid's diaper.
Is the name of his book. When is your next talk so we can promote it?
I'll be on Instagram again Saturday at 5:30. Oh no, Wednesday. I forget the days. You know, we all forget the days now. Monday,
totally.
Sunday. Yeah, it's Wednesday. I'm on Wednesday at 8:00. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about how we can all join a little bit together in some unity. And hopefully maybe some people will hear that. But I'm hoping. But Donnie, I want to just tell you again, because, you know, when you bring up kids, that's my heart. So again, just when you go to your son, pause and say, if I was my son right now, what would I want to hear from my dad? Let that compassion guide what you say, buddy, because I'm telling you, you're a guy I can tell, you're a feeling guy. And it's going to work out really good. Like, just give him what you would want to hear. And that's going to be a real good conversation.
Great. Thank you.
You are a good dad. And you're a good man, Thomas Gagliano. The Problem Was Me. Check it out. Check out his talk next Wednesday. This coming Wednesday, I should say. Thank you so much, Thomas. Much love to you.
Thank you for having me, guys. Enjoy.
Thank you. Yeah. Stay safe out there. All right, guys. Bye-bye. We'll be right back. Oh, my God. That was so good, wasn't it?
It's always good to get help.
I know.
Communicating,
really
understanding what you're feeling, experiencing, you know, resistances we have built in from our childhood. That's the part
that's
of like
key.
Everything that's hard right now. You know, so many of the hard conversations people have to have right now, that we have to have, that everyone has to have, you know, even related to what's going on to bring change. It's like we're not only having to find the words, you know, a lot of times we don't even realize we're having to find
our own truth and not an old belief system that was programmed.
Right.
Us.
So it's like, I want to say this, you know, there's a person I know who says inappropriate things. I need to tell that person that ain't cool. And then fear of your dad hitting you might come out and, you know, so right. You bite your tongue. You know, I got to tell my boss he's wrong.
Right.
But no, I'm scared because of some inner child stuff. It's like, so it's where
self-inquiry is so important.
It is. And, you know, and just working through it,
healing your inner child.
Yeah. And looking for someone like, you know,
some help,
Thomas, who can one little gem of information can help you.
It really does.
Process and break through and speak your truth. Because, you know, we just have to grow and heal and change right now.
I know. I love all these light workers out there, including you. I love you, Donnie Wahlberg.
I love you.
I love you so much.
I love her.
All right.
I love her a lot.
We ran out of time, but I'll see you mañana. Thanks so much for listening. Stay safe.
Bye.
Jenny got a dog. Jenny got a dog. Little fun. Loves that thing a ton. She's a toy Shih Tzu, small enough to fit in shoes. I heard that Jenny has permission to carry it on a plane. But man, I ain't bluffing now that Jenny's got a dog. She picked up DJ for her. Jenny got a dog. Jenny got a dog.
The Jenny McCarthy Show. Number one in your hearts. Number one in your car's presets.